when you'd lived there for a while, you realised that it was jointly ruled by Britain and France. If you were French, you came under the French system. If you were British, you came under the British system. And if you, as Australians, of course, we had to come under the French under the British system. Most of us had good friends in both camps. And then, of course, there was the third group, which was the New Hebrideans, and they were a mix up between the two, which was very difficult for them.
You had a situation where you had British schools that spoke English and French schools that spoke French, French post offices, French hospitals, French police and British police patrolling jointly. What if there were some? Could you like do something like break a French law, which wasn't breaking a British law? Depending on what law you'd broken, you'd be arrested by a gendarme or a policeman.
Well, you couldn't be. I couldn't be arrested by a gendarme. I had to be arrested by a British policeman.
You very nearly said frog then, didn't you?
Yes. Well, that was. We referred to them as frogs, and they referred to us as rosbifs, which is roast beefs. And so that was just the common... And they weren't considered as abusive language. That was just the way it was. It was just normal slang.
While all this was going on and the various high commissioners were competing to see whose flagpole would be highest and whose marching band would play the loudest, what was happening with the New Hebrideans, nowadays referred to as Ni Vanuatu? How were they coping with this division? Because they were sort of divided into Anglophone and Francophone, which still continues to this day.
Yes, well, that was the case. And the French New Hebrideans spoke French, and the English New Hebrideans spoke English. And so to communicate, of course, you had to resort to this form of pidgin English, which we call Bishlamar. And so that was the lingua franca, if you like. And so if I wanted to speak to a French person and my French wasn't very good, you'd drop into Bishlamar. And so we could all communicate quite adequately through Bishlamar.
Now that Vanuatu is independent, do you think that being jointly ruled by France and Britain was a hindrance to them with this linguistic division? Or could it be a help that they actually speak both languages, French and English?
That's a difficult thing to answer because New Caledonia was very French, and New Caledonia was streets ahead of New Hebrides. But then New Caledonia had the nickel mines and all of that. The New Hebrides only had copper, and that wasn't a lot to earn its living on. So it was very difficult to make a comparison. From my point of view, it was an excellent place to live.
You were there in the lead-up to independence and immediately post-independence, and at that time, although it was a time of hope, obviously there were some pretty non-humorous things happening. There were some revolts in the north. It got a bit intense there around independent crime.
Oh, yes. Yes, and so the Anglophone-Francophone thing did develop into the Coconut War, which was unfortunate. But I think that was more or less pushed along by the expats rather than the local New Hebrideans.
Have you been back to Vanuatu post-independence to have a look at it?
Oh, many times, many times. In fact, we were there just a few weeks ago, back in June, when a very good friend of mine, Artie George Sokomanu, who was the first president of Vanuatu, well, the new country of Vanuatu, we were very good friends, and he was good enough to launch the book for me at the book launch just a few weeks ago in June.
Do people in Vanuatu look back on those old condominium days with affection, or do they think, oh, it was colonialism, it was bad, we were being dominated? How do they feel about it?
I'm really not in a position to say much. I think that was just their history, and I probably the younger people look at it differently, but I've had not a lot to do with the younger people. The people I know are all of my vintage, if you like, or of the time I was there.
And what have they told you about how they feel about it?
Well, I think most of them are pretty old now. For instance, George, when he was there the other day, he was a very old, very sick man. In fact, when I called his... he's just living in an island hut now. When I called there, he was very, very old. And this old, stoop man, when I knocked on the door, I said, oh, you don't know me, George, but I'm Neil Begley. Well, he must have dropped 20 years in age just like that. It was absolutely an incredible thing. He stood up and he smiled, and you know, you wouldn't have believed he was the same fellow. And when I asked him to if he'd be come along to the book launch, he said he'd be honored to do so. So he was there and dressed in his suit and his collar and his tie, and he'd come back 20 years just like that.